Hello, and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're talking about oregano and marjoram.
Yes, and it is a fun day in our home studios, because here in Atlanta, there is a thunderstorm.
A pretty epic one, yes.
Yes, so ambiance.
Yes, this is the very most goth discussion of oregano and marjoram that anyone will ever have.
Yes, it's exactly what you listeners needed in your life, I am sure.
Positive, 100%.
Yes. So this is a topic that's been on my mind because I've been getting oregano as a part of my CSA. And it is one of the few things that I am successfully growing. I tried to grow a lot of things.
Huzzah!
But so far, only oregano was taken. Oregano and mint. And I used some last night.
Have you been, like, rooting them in water?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. And I've just been using, like, cuttings and stuff. And it grows pretty fast, I gotta say. I got a lot of it. And I used some last night for the first time when I was cooking. And it smelled so good. It smelled so good.
Oh, yay. Yeah.
Yes.
Huzzah. Yeah. I use dried oregano and marjoram in cooking all the time. Anytime that I'm making anything like even vaguely Mediterranean-y, those things go in there. But I don't think I've ever had it fresh aside from like maybe in like a little like poultry bundle of herbs or something. But I'm not sure.
It's delicious. The smell alone, excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I love how fuzzy it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Yes. Well, on the other hand, though, before we did this research, I could not have told you what marjoram was. I had to look up how to pronounce it. And when you suggested we should do oregano and marjoram, I was like, huh, okay. Because I had no idea what it was. I was like, are they related? I don't know. So this is a big learning one for me.
Fun. Huzzah. Yeah. Learning is great. We are yes. all in the business of learning.
We are. We're big proponents of it. But all right, I guess that brings us to our question. Oregano and marjoram. What are they?
Good question. Okay. All right. Well, oregano and marjoram are our herbs with a small, soft green leaves that have a similar but kind of varyingly peppery, citrusy, savory, woody, and bitter flavors. And they come from a number of different species within a few genuses, but kind of mostly originum. And there is some etymology madness involved in this one.
Oh, yes. So, the name oregano means joy of the mountain, although the word itself might have originally come from somewhere else. Meanwhile, marjoram probably derived from Sanskrit, but it sounded close to the word for greater in Latin, which led to the French word margarine, which was picked up and spelled in a variety of different ways in English until the current English spelling was settled on sometime in the 1700s. Confusingly, oregano means marjoram in Spanish. And in parts of Europe, oregano goes by wild marjoram and marjoram goes by sweet marjoram. And quick clarification, oregano means joy of the mountain in Greek.
Okay.
Yes. So a lot going on there.
Right. So marjoram is just one species, originum marjorana. And oregano is a common term for a whole bunch of different species. It's really a word for like a flavor profile more than a single plant. That originum, the genus, is part of the Lamiaceae family, the mint family. And this genus contains some 45 species. And all of them, usually except for the one that is marjoram, are called oregano. Plus, there are whole other genuses, Lipia and Hedioma and Lantana, some of which are native to whole other parts of the world that get colloquially lumped in with oregano. Some of them aren't even in the same botanical family. I read one medical paper that said that there are at least 61 species and 17 genuses in six different families that are called oregano.
Simple. Not yep. confusing at all.
Nope. 0%.
Yes.
So this is all to say that if you have a jar of dried oregano in your kitchen, the specific plant that is in it could vary. Though that said, there are a few species that are most commonly used in cooking. Common oregano, or Originum vulgare, has a bright flavor. Mexican oregano, or Lipia graveolens, has like a more peppery flavor. Spanish and Greek oreganos, O. vivens and O. heraclites, are a little bit milder. Marjoram, meanwhile, is a little bit warmer and a little bit less bitter. Sometimes it can vary.
Wow. Lots going on here.
Yep. And as we said, these can be used fresh or dried.
Yes. And they're used in all kinds of cuisines and in all kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm. The flowers are also edible. The European versions are particularly popular in cuisines from the border of the Mediterranean Sea, because that's where they're pretty much originally from. They are known mostly in America as like an Italian cuisine flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And sweet marjoram is often one of the ingredients in absinthe.
Ah, huh. There you go.
Yeah. Our old friend absinthe. Well, what about nutrition?
Okay, as with many herbs, you're probably not eating enough of this stuff to have like a macronutrient impact on your diet. But these herbs can provide a big bang of flavor for a small caloric buck. So they're really great to incorporate into your cooking and your diet. And also, okay, these herbs, like pretty much any herb that if you run your hand just gently through a bush of it or across a branch of it, and you come away with the scent of that herb on your hand, that means that this herb evolved to produce some oils that keep pests away. So, specifically, the reason that some of them are fuzzy on the leaves are those little fuzzy hairs help keep the oils on the surface, and therefore, you know, keep it right there so that if an insect comes along, it goes, oh, ick, go, get it off me, get away, never mind, not going to eat this one.
Meanwhile, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Yes. Again, humans decided we liked that. So it's really effective against like microbes and funguses and insects and some animals. But humans are like, oh, delicious poison. Yay. Not that it acts as poison in us. It can actually be helpful medicinally. And oregano and marjoram have been used in folk medicine for pretty much ever, for things from asthma to indigestion, and are currently being studied for all kinds of helpful properties, antioxidant, antibacterial, antimycotic, anti-inflammatory, anti-diabetic. Extracted oils are already being used in livestock feed to help prevent gut infections and thus prevent the use of antibiotics. And from some of the studies I read, it seems that they both stimulate those animals' guts to produce this like protective gut mucus, but then further can weaken bacteria cell walls, leading to eventual cell death. And this is especially cool because of the overuse of antibiotics in well, everything, honestly. But but so hopefully this can be with more research, this can be turned into something that can do a lot of good in the world. As with anything, the saver motto, you know, bodies are complicated. More research needs to be done before incorporating any medicinal dose of anything into your diet. You should definitely consult a doctor. Be wary of snake oil.
Always.
Yeah.
I just want to note here, listeners, as Lauren said that, there was a flash of lightning behind her and then a roll of thunder. And I used to have a history professor who would, like, whenever that would happen, he would say, Hollywood couldn't do it better. So I just got reminded of that. It's very dramatic.
Oh, that's great. I was so into thinking about microbes that I wasn't even paying attention. I'm into it, though.
It was awesome. Very dramatic indeed. We do have a couple of numbers for you. Mm-hmm. Americans import 14 million pounds of oregano a year, making it our top import when it comes to herbs like this, both quantity-wise and value-wise.
Huh. So okay.
We like we like some oregano here.
We do.
Pizza is the number one cause. We'll get into that later.
It is. We do eat a lot of pizza, and it is like a pizza-y herb.
Yes, 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 yes. Oh, and I did want to note, oregano is the name of a computer programming language.
Huh, there you go. All right, cool.
Yeah, cool, cool, cool. And oregano and marjoram have quite the interesting history. Hollywood couldn't do it better.
Yes, and we will get into that as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, keeping the history of oregano and marjoram separate is incredibly difficult because the names were often used interchangeably in historical records and some other herbs got mixed up in there too. So, shrug emoji. Historians think that historically marjoram was more widely used, except in the Mediterranean, where oregano was preferred. So that's sort of where they work from, but...
Yeah. And this interchangeability of names in the records is why I was just like, oh, nope, we can't do one or the other of those. Let's just...
yep.
Let's just roll with the whole mess. Yeah.
Roll with the whole mess. Another saver motto. So both most likely originated in the Mediterranean and perhaps specifically in Greece. Some sources indicate that the ancient Egyptians were cultivating oregano over 3,000 years ago. Some of the first records date back to sometime between 1600 to 1200 BCE. There are these images recorded by the Hittites in what is now modern-day Syria. Ancient Greek physician Hippocrates is believed to be the first to use oregano in written records, so 460 to 370 BCE-ish. In the first century BCE, marjoram was mentioned in the poem Epithalamium by Catullus. Aristophanes' Women in Power from 393 BCE references marjoram. Also, Women in Power. I gotta check that out.
I know, right? Hey.
The ancient Greeks thought that adding oregano into the diets of cows improved the taste of their meat.
Okay.
They were also big believers in oregano's medicinal value, sometimes making a cream out of it and using it for aches and sores. Marjoram was similarly highly regarded as a medicinal herb, recommended for things like headaches, insomnia, and asthma. Galen, Dioscorides, Pliny, Theophrastus, and Mithridates, to name a few, all made mention of the healing powers of one or both of these herbs. Aristotle claimed that oregano could combat poison, claiming it could save the life of a tortoise who ate a snake. And funny story, Lauren, as you know, I have a kind of a bad record with pets.
You do.
Well, I did have a pet turtle, and my brother had a pet snake, and we were on vacation once, and we had to leave them for one reason or the other in the same aquarium.
Oh, and
with us on vacation. Like, we didn't leave them home, but at the place we were at on vacation, we only had the one aquarium.
Oh,
and
okay.
We, like, went out to a restaurant or something, and I was so concerned. I'm like... My brother's snake is going to attack my turtle. I'm so worried about it. When we came back, lo and behold, my turtle had eaten the snake.
Oh, no.
Yep. Oh. I was shocked and proud and also sad.
I'm sorry.
To my brother. I think my turtle did die, though.
Oh, no.
From the snake.
Yeah. Oh, that
only
we'll see,
I had known.
That is sad. If you had only had some oregano. I love that claim. Like, that is such a specific, like, I love that, like, whatever else Aristotle was up to, he was going, like,
happening?
You know what can really help tortoises who have the snake-eating problem?
Oregano.
Oregano. Great thinkers.
Indeed.
I'm sure it had something specific. I'm sure there was a specific circumstance tied to it, but that's...
Maybe he had a pet turtle who ate a snake.
Maybe he had a pet snake.
Oh, Aristotle and I might have more in common than I think. But anyway, all right. These philosophers, thinkers, they weren't the only ones who were proponents of the medicinal benefits of oregano. The ancient Chinese prescribed it for a wide number of things, from jaundice to vomiting to diarrhea to itching. Itching. The ancient Romans often are credited with spreading oregano to the rest of Europe and northern Africa. And the ancient Greeks and Romans believed the smell of oregano and marjoram was meant to remind people of the beauty of Aphrodite slash Venus, and or that she created these things as a symbol of happiness, and also because of this was seen as an aphrodisiac.
Yep. Oh, clearly.
Of course.
I mean, it's not lettuce.
One day I have this book of jokes. I know I've mentioned it before, and it's from like the 1400s. I'm going to get it out, and I'm going to read the lettuce jokes about it being causing impotence. It's been great. Be a special
One of those
episode.
After dark episodes of Savor.
Yes, where we do like snap jokes from the 1400s. It's going to be a real hoot.
Real knee slapper, yeah.
Yes, oh yeah. Ancient Greeks may have even used crowns of oregano in their wedding traditions, as the ancient Romans with marjoram. Several legends claim that oregano was used in love potions and that people, usually women, would put oregano under their pillows at night to get a visit from Aphrodite, who would tell them the first name of their future spouse.
Ah.
And this was a tradition at St. Luke's Day as well. I'm curious, though, like, how much of it is, if they tell you the first name is whatever, that you just are disregarding everyone else and looking for John or whatever.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It seems problematic, to be honest, but it's, again, humans didn't have Netflix. They had to make their own fun.
It's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. One legend goes that a servant by the name of Amaricus, an early name for the genus of oregano, was tasked by the king of Cyprus to transport a valuable and precious vial of perfume. But alas, he dropped it and promptly died of fright, falling right into the puddle of spilled perfume. The gods took pity on him and transformed him into the fragrant Originum. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, you died of fright. It turned into an herb.
But makes as much sense as anything.
Just about. The ancient Greeks used oregano in burial rites, and in ancient Egypt, oregano was sometimes left in tombs to accompany the dead on their journey to the afterlife, and medicinally, and as a disinfectant. And again, oregano or marjoram, hard to say. But one of those. They used it in the rites for gods like Osiris. If we look at the Bible, on the other hand, the hyssop used to mark the doors of Jewish homes during the final plague, more correctly, probably refers to marjoram or oregano.
Huh.
Yes. And marjoram and oregano were also believed by the ancient Greeks and Romans to ward off evil spirits and colds.
Okay.
And were sometimes used in amulets. No witch's spell, goblin, or devil could bypass oregano hanging over the doorway or strewn at an entrance.
Ooh.
See, I love thinking of this kind of stuff. Like, you're the old, a devil coming to really bother somebody, and you're like, oregano, no! I love it.
Oh, foiled again by oregano.
I love it so much. In 1373's Vers Herbal, the oregano and marjoram families were called brotherwort, wort being a Germanic word to indicate a plant was medicinal. By this point, at least, oregano was grown in England. Oregano made its way to China during the Middle Ages. It was a very popular ingredient in Europe at this point, too, used to flavor all kinds of things. Fish, stews, shellfish, eggs, meats, rice, salads, and might have been used to make teas and as a flavoring in beer.
See, this is a thing that I was thinking about, and I have had a lot of different beers, y'all, and I don't think I've had one with an oregano marjoram shtick going on, and now I'm super curious about that.
Yeah, I don't think I have either, or at least it wasn't, like, widely noted on the advertising or something. So, another thing to add to our list, Lauren.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it would go really well with something kind of hoppy, you know?
Yeah, it seems like it would. Listeners, let us know if you've got any suggestions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Shakespeare mentioned marjoram in several of his works, including King Lear, The Winter's Tale, and All's Well That Ends Well. And here's a quote from that one. "Indeed, sir, she was the sweet marjoram of the salad, or rather the herb of grace."
Aww.
The sweet marjoram of the salad. Aww. A popular 15th century European dessert with sugar and sweet marjoram flowers. Sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1650s, English botanist Nicholas Culpepper wrote that marjoram possessed, quote, "warming and comfortable and cold diseases of the head, stomach, snooze, and other parts taken inwardly or out." Qualities. A bit earlier, another English botanist named John Gerard recommended marjoram for all kinds of things, including for those, quote, "given to overmuch sighing," so that's me, and, quote, "swooning of the heart."
Oh, swooning of the heart.
Yeah. He also recommended a combo of wine and oregano as a remedy for, quote, "venomous stings" or poppy poisoning.
Sure.
Wine and oregano. All right.
Yeah, put anything in wine. It's going back to that old medicinal tradition of like, well, what are you going to do with it? Put it in wine.
I feel like, yeah, that was a big thing for a while. Oregano and marjoram were both associated with happiness in the Victorian language of flowers, which is something I didn't know about until we started doing this show, and I now find quite fascinating.
Oh, yes. Oh, it's really beautiful. And one of my favorite tropes in both, like, Victorian literature and modern literature that is making reference to Victorian literature, because it's a whole weird, beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're looking for a rabbit hole,
yeah,
that's a good one.
You can make a whole sentence out of a bouquet, and it's great.
I love that. In 1935, Henry Beston wrote in Herbs and the Earth, "Of all herbal fragrances, there is none to my mind more pleasant than that of sweet marjoram, of that plant which the French call marjolaine à coquille, and put with keepsakes and add to salads." Big salad herb, it seems.
Right?
While oregano was used in Mexican recipes, but more correctly, Lipia, it wasn't really recorded in the United States for a long time. In fact, in the 1942 cookbook, How to Cook a Wolf, great name, author M.F.K. Fisher only mentioned it once, calling it an optional but nice ingredient for minestrone, or as we say, or at least in my family, minestrone soup. And even then, she went on to write, "I know several earnest, thoughtful women who would rather see their children peat than brew something with the foreign name minestrone, because in this year of 1942, the United States is at war with Italy." Oof. That didn't change until soldiers returning for World War II came back with the love of pizza from Italy, shedding a light on what for most people in this country had been a previously unknown ingredient. Many times, pizza let the oregano flavor shine. And this association was so strong, oregano was nicknamed the pizza herb, and it's still called that in some places by some today.
Mm-hmm.
The soldiers also got exposed to oregano in a different way. One of the U.S. Army's food suppliers was an Italian immigrant by the name of Hector Boyardi, but you might know him by his Americanized name, Chef Boyardee.
Oh, great.
Blew my dang mind.
Yep.
He included oregano in his tinned spaghetti sauce. Prior to the soldiers' return to America, Italian immigrants accounted for 1/5 of New York City's population, and they used oregano in their cooking. However, Italian cooking and food largely didn't branch out beyond those communities at the time. A 1939 New York Herald Tribune article even described what pizza was, as if, you know, people reading it wouldn't have any idea what it was.
Yeah, very specific description.
Yes, and there was even a pronunciation guide on how to say it. So times have changed.
just a tiny bit, yes. It still does just blow my mind that was only 1939. That was less than 100 years ago.
Yeah. And one of my favorite pieces of research I've ever come across was an article. I think it was for the pizza episode, or it might have been the apple pie one, where the author was listing all these foods, like, in shock that people were eating them. And it was like, "This will never take off in America, pizza, apple pie." And it's like all the things that are, quote, American today.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. taste for oregano exploded in the United States after World War II. It went from something with such a low number of imports, the Department of Commerce didn't even list it separately, to an annual 1.5 million pounds used in the United States by the 60s. Sales of it rose 5,200% in the United States from 1948 to 1956 alone.
Whoa, what?
Yeah, that is a huge percentage number.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Italian food in general also went through a post-World War II boom. This was due to many, many things, like the arrival of more immigrants, gas-fired ceramic pizza ovens, the opening of more and more Italian restaurants, the expansion of companies that specialized in Italian food. Chef Boyardee's canned spaghetti sauce was one of the first televised commercials. And the first direct flight from New York to Rome was offered by Pan Am in 1958, meaning a wave of American tourists returning with a taste for Italian foods. In 1951, the song Art's Oregano by the jazz pianist Art Pepper debuted. Pretty sure soon after that, Frank Sinatra's That's Amore came out. Pablo Neruda's poem Love Sonnet 34 opens with, "You are the daughter of the sea, oregano's first cousin. Swimmer, your body is pure as the water. Cook, your blood is quick as the soil. Everything you do is full of flowers, rich with the earth."
Oh,
oregano.
Oh, I love Pablo Neruda.
Yeah, me too. The 1960 cookbook, I Hate to Cook book by Peg Bracken, listed oregano as a staple ingredient, which was a big deal because it sort of made a whole thing the book did about sticking to two ingredients you probably already had in your cupboard and avoiding, quote, exotic ingredients.
Wow. So, yeah. So in just like 20 years, it had become a kitchen staple.
That's what a rise. Meteoric rise of oregano.
Yeah. And then more modernly, as of the 2010s, oil of oregano became something of a pop health fad. A lot of celebrities Instagramming and tweeting about how, oh, yes, I'm getting a cold or trying to protect myself from a cold. Better use that oil of oregano.
Huh.
And yes, at, you know, see above re our slogan of medicinal ingestion of anything. And somewhere along the line, and this didn't occur to me to start researching until we sat down today. But there's kind of an old a joke or a meme or urban legend about less than ethical weed dealers selling kids oregano instead of cannabis, and you know, the two plants don't look dissimilar. Both have a certain herbal smell to them. So I suppose upon brief inspection, you could certainly be fooled by some oregano. But if you Google this, if you Google like oregano cannabis in the same little Google search bar, the results are kind of hilarious and include one story from Colorado from 2018, where some teenagers knocked over a cannabis boutique and stole some of the bottles off of the shelves, not realizing that the bottles that are just out for display on the shelves do not contain actual cannabis. The store owners were like, yeah, no, that was oregano. They just made off with like a lot of oregano.
Make some pizza, kids.
Yeah.
Great. You'll never have to buy oregano again.
Yeah, come on. It was probably nice oregano.
Probably saved you like $5 to $7 over a lifetime. Depending on your oregano use. I don't know.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I do have like at least 3 bottles of oregano and at least 2 of marjoram in my kitchen. And I'm not sure how they all got there. So
I feel like you have a lot of ingredients like that.
Yeah.
Just got a mishmash of a lot of things going on.
that is truer than I think even I know, Annie.
Well, I totally forgotten about that whole oregano marijuana thing, but it was a fun reminder.
Yeah.
You never know where the research will go, our other motto.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
'Tis true. Well, that's about what we have to say today for oregano and marjoram.
Mm-hmm. And we do have a little bit more for you. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with listener. Thank you. Thank you. That's how my oregano is growing. Like a weed, but it's not because I love it.
Oh, yay. Come.
I wouldn't mind weeds either. I can't grow that much, Lauren. It's. Oh. I'm getting better, but.
It's not easy. It's you're learning. You're learning.
I am. It's a constant work in process. Mm-hmm. Work in process, work in progress.
Sure, either
and
one.
Process.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. Writer wrote, I've been listening to your show for a while and want to finally write in about some connections I made recently. First, I want to tell you about a pretty wild experience I had with The Simpsons growing up. I finished elementary school in the summer of 2007, just before the movie release, and my dad took me to the beach to light off fireworks and celebrate going on to middle school. To make a long story short, one of these fireworks ended up under me when I went to take a seat. Yes, I sat on a firework.
Oh, no.
Leaving me with the first firework injury of the year in my county. Quick shout out to the ER nurse that listened to my story with the straight face.
Oh.
As a result of my grievous wounds and my being a huge Simpsons fan, my parents took me to Seattle to one of the pop-up Quickie Mart locations where I promptly loaded up on Crustios and Buzz Cola or Fruit Loops and Diet Coke, as I soon learned. Even considering my reason for getting to go, visiting that shop has always been a special memory for me. I had never had a novelty food like that from a shop I watched, and it was such a fun experience. Another fictional foods that could be fun is the Fallout universe. Novelty consumables have come out of that world as well. One other related anecdote, my mother used to grow poppy plants at my childhood home. One night we had taken a walk to our local movie store and came home to almost all of her plants being dug up and stolen. What a trip for my young self hearing that someone stole the little plants I helped plant as a drug. The same week you did your episode where you talked about the Bagelrito, another podcast, My Brother and Me, also referenced it as an absurd fast food item. This was just a fun connection I made. I love hearing podcasts I listen to connect in vague ways. Also, I just want to thank you folks for inspiring me to plant some asparagus during quarantine. It hasn't sprouted yet, but it is a lovely addition to my container garden.
Oh,
also,
yeah.
I just want to note, the subject line of this email was the time I lit myself on fire for a Buzz Cola. So, bravo, writer.
Yeah, goodness.
I mean, at least you got something out of it.
Yeah, I, you know, should everyone who sits on a firework be so lucky?
Exactly. And yeah, keep us up to date on how your asparagus goes.
Yeah, indeed.
That's awesome.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Cool. Mm-hmm. Tina wrote, when my boyfriend at the time and now husband and I were in college, he had most of a jar of sauerkraut left after making some kielbasa and pierogies, which were delicious and served his Polish heritage well. He decided to see what could be done with it. So after some internet searching, he found a recipe for sauerkraut pie. I was very skeptical, but gave him my blessing and left him to it. A couple of hours later, he presented me with a strangely bland custardy pie. Eating it gave the sensation of a slightly vanilla coconut, which was very disconcerting. The recipe had required rinsing the kraut, so the vinegar taste was not present, but the cabbage in a custard pie was definitely not a good thing. He has since made many, many more desserts that have been wonderful, but that one still lives on in family lore, and our kids are all rightly horrified by the idea.
I've got to appreciate the innovation, though, you know?
Right? Yeah, that is really turning lemons into custardy, unpleasant lemonade.
That's how the saying originally went. People have just forgotten it to time, but yeah.
Clearly.
It was specifically about this sauerkraut pie situation.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've all made that dessert. I remember one time, oh gosh, I'm so like frugal and I wanted to make, I had all these ingredients I just wanted to use up, and it was my friend's birthday and I'm a terrible friend. So I was like, I'm just going to use these things and see what happens. And I made the like densest cake you can imagine. It actually tasted good, but it was like, it's like if you had a huge tin tier cake and it's somehow been smushed into one tiny layer.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I don't know how or why that happened. I don't even know what was in there. I know there was some bananas.
Well, I feel like I'm isolating your problem.
I was just throwing ingredients in. Like,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
This will be fun. Surely it will turn out. And my friends
just
won't
fine.
Hate me for showing up at their birthday. There's a lot of pictures of it. And yeah, it also lives on in infamy.
I've had plenty of dessert fails. I think probably at this point the longest running and funniest one is just the fact that I don't think my freezer runs cold enough to freeze an ice cream machine bowl in. So I've tried for like multiple holidays on end to create an ice cream for dessert for family holidays, and it just hasn't ever worked. It's just never, I've been like, well, I have this soup. I've done it like granita style a few times where you just like lay it in a really thin layer in a sheet pan and kind of like fork it until it ices up. But yeah, that's, yep. It's to the point that my friend's mother bought me a new ice cream machine. And I'm like, I don't think this is the issue.
I have faith in you, Lauren. Also, I need you to send a picture of it for me because I am working on my silly Star Wars play. And as anyone would know, there's an ice cream man, ice cream machine man, in Empire Strikes Back. So I am looking for a prop that will fit.
Gotcha. Yep. Thank you. Will do. Will do.
This is very important. Very, very important. thanks to both of those listeners for writing in. If you have any dessert disasters you want to share with us, we would love to hear them.
Always.
Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Black Lives Matter, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.